welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL division round and looking at our NFL conference championship games. We will have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, and we will have our Best for Last, which will be a discussion on the national championship game in college football. And as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't forget to follow and turn on your post notifications for at JTime Sports on all your favorite social medias. I repeat, at JTime Sports, to make sure you are in tune to announcements, updates, so on and so forth, along with a lot of breaking news. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statement. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. I have a ton of energy this morning recording this. Of course, you guys know it's an instant release show. I am absolutely excited to be here. I'm excited to be with you guys this morning. I cannot overestimate that, how happy I am if there's an exciting division around that we kind of deserve this, football fans. I'm not going to lie to you, because we had a blowout-filled wild card round. Sans a couple of moments, obviously. Jaden Daniels, what he did in Tampa. We had a couple of moments there in the wild card round that was exciting, but for the most part, the games were cakewalks. However, the divisional round delivered four bangers, even though the biggest margin of victory was 14, which was Commanders and Lions, and we'll touch on them, of course. None of these games felt out of reach until the last. I mean, even the Commanders and Lions with like 3 minutes left, people were like, you know, if this happens and that happens, you know, this Lions offense, like, you know, so banger after banger of a game. You know, we're going to start off with Texans at Chiefs. So here's how we're going to do this. It's only four games. So we're going to rip off a lot of numbers at first, and then we're going to get into, you know, some analysis, of course. So Texans at Chiefs in the division round, open up the division round card weekend. We're going to get into numbers first. We'll get into what happened. So, C.J. Stroud, 19 of 28, 245, no touchdowns, no picks. Patrick Mahomes, 16 of 25, 177, one touchdown. No picks. Joe Mixon, 88 yards on 18 carries and a touchdown. Kareem Hunt led the Chiefs, 44 yards on 8 carries and a touchdown. The Chiefs only ran for, okay, the official stat is 50. But that because of Matt Ariza's purposeful safety. So really the official stat is 68. However, the Texans ran for a 149. KC's main receiver, of course, is playoff time, Travis Kelce, 7 for a 117 in the touchdown. Houston's main receiver was Nico Collins, 5 for 81. And that's pretty much all the individual stats that anyone cares about. And then looking at the team stats, first downs, 18 to 14, Texans. The Texans created more third downs. The Texans ran more plays. The Texans had 124 more yards. They had one more yard per play. They had 25 more yards passing. They had officially 100 more rushing yards. However, the big number, two big numbers that jump out when you go into the box score. They even had the ball for more time, 7 more minutes. The big number that jump out in the box score is penalties. The Texans had 8 penalties for 82 yards. The Chiefs had 4 penalties, 29 yards. Neither team turned the ball over. And in the red zone, the Texans were 1-for-3. The Chiefs 2-for-5. All right, so now that the numbers are out of the way, let's get into the analysis itself. This game, and I want to take nothing away from the Chiefs. Okay, I want to go through all the what I feel obligatory moments. Congratulations on the Chiefs for your 7th straight conference championship game. Patrick Mahomes ridiculously has never started a season and not finished it at least in the conference championship game. He doesn't know what it's like to lose before this. He's never felt that emotion in his life. Congratulations to Andy Reid. He continues to march. He becomes the third coach ever to win 300 total games between regular season and playoffs. And he's within shouting distance of both Shula and Belichick. I want to give credit to the Chiefs organization. They continue to find studs. Like I said, the main problem in continuing a dynasty and a dynastic run is retooling every year. The first thing you got to have is your quarterback and got to have a stable head coach. It's retooling coordinators. It's retooling personnel, because when those guys are good on your team, people are going to pay them to come off of your team. And especially these days with how much quarterbacks taking up a percentage of the salary cap, it's really hard to keep retooling, especially if you're always picking 27th and below. You don't get those superstars, quote unquote, every year. Although the NFL has so much talent, half the league's undrafted. If you have a good GM like a Brett Veach, you can continue to retool, and that's what they've done. And then every time they've had to make a play, they've made it. I mean, it's just they've blocked field goals, they've gotten scrambles, they've come up with fumbles, they've had, you know, I said it'd be that drive, because just like they played the first time, you know, Houston gets it within one, and KC puts together that long, drawn-out drive almost to the T of what you want perfection-wise, and they go up by 8 and they win the game. I mean, they are just great situationally. It's just every single time you need them to be off, they're not off, right? And it's just, it's insane how they get it right every single time. Or I feel like they get it right every single time. And on Houston's side, this was a year that you battled through a C.J. Stroud. You battled through a C.J. Stroud sophomore slump of a season. He was not nearly as good last year as he was this year. Because last year he went for 4,000 yards, 23 touchdowns, 5 picks with 100 rating and a QBR, 100 passer rating and QBR 58. This year he only played 15 games in his rookie year. This year in 17 games, 3,700 yards, 20 touchdowns, 12 picks, passer rating of 87 and a QBR 49.9, basically at ultimately average, because perfectly average is 50. So he did not have nearly the year. He even had 3 rushing touchdowns as a rookie. He had none this year. So he didn't have nearly the season. He had a bit of a sophomore slump, and they overcame that. And D'Amico Ryans, year two, your process. People trying to understand your process, understand your thought process, plan for you differently in situations. And so it's just you go through all of that, you hit all that, and you know. So congratulations to the Texans. You still find a way to win your division. You still find a way to be the 4th seed. You won the first round of the playoffs, right? So good year in Houston, especially because you overcame Stephon Diggs blowing his ACL. You overcame the devastating injury to the other wide receiver whose name escapes me, and I can't think of his name right now. But you overcome the injury to him. That happened in the Chiefs game, ironically. You overcome his injury. So you lose 2 of your 3 best receivers later in the season. Nico Collins was in and out of the lineup all year. So congratulations to the Texans, right? You have a lot to build on. You own your draft. now because he had to give up your first round pick last year because of the Will Anderson trade, which, hey, worth it. And so now you get your draft pick back. You got a good GM. You know, you have your coach. You have your quarterback. You probably have your coordinator another year because I don't see Slovic is the OC in Houston. I don't see Slovic getting a job this cycle. I don't see either coordinator, any of your coordinators getting a job this cycle. So you're going to bring your whole staff back. And you get CJ Stroud in the year three. And now, again, Houston has to be a free agent destination. I have a quarterback. I have the coach. They're always winning their division. They're going to have cap space. Like, if I'm a free agent, Houston might be a team. Like, if I'm a T. Higgins and it's like Cincinnati can't come up with my money, Houston could be a spot. I get a good quarterback. I got a good head coach. I'm going to be the number one receiver. But I have a dog next to me, Nico Collins. I have Dalton Schultz. We can run the ball. Like, if I'm a receiver, I said this last year about being a running back. I was like, if I was a running back, I would have looked at Houston as just like, oh, I'm the missing piece. If I'm a receiver, I'm looking at Houston because I get my money, have a good quarterback. I'm not going to be – I may get the number one corner, but I won't get the coverage rolled to me because Nico Collins is on the other side. Like, I still have Dalton Schultz in the middle of the field, and then Joe Mixon's at running back. So you can't really load up on me because so many other pieces exist. So if I'm a receiver, Houston could be my spot. Okay, got it all out of the way. At a certain point, I'm sick of having the conversation. At a certain point, I'm tired of hearing about it in the national media. And what's worse is I'm tired of it being accurate. The Kansas City Chiefs have the most favorable whistle I've ever seen in the NFL. Now, I'm not 60. I'm not 70. I don't remember what happened with the steel curtain. But no one talked about the officials back then, right? I don't remember what happened with, oh my God, the 90s Bills. And if they had kept getting a job call on the Super Bowl. Like, I don't remember that, right? Like, I wasn't there. I'm 27. I have a Rolodex of fine football of about 20 years. I remember moments briefly before that, or I've seen them enough where they feel like I remember them. But regardless, I have a football Rolodex of about 20 years. NFL officiating Discord. The NBA has always been a thing because officials matter so much with fouls and stuff like that. But NFL official, you know, Discord and talking, you know, stuff in the media really only popped off about 10-ish, 12-ish years ago. Well, no. The Tuck Rule. The Tuck Rule was the first one. But then after that, you don't really remember much of it up until about 10 years ago. The Kansas City Chiefs have the most favorable whistle I've ever seen. And it's always at the worst moments. It's always at the moment where like, oh, their drive's going to die. Flag. What? And the two plays everyone's talking about is the roughing the passer penalty. That it was third, I think it's third and 14. Mahomes throws an errant pass to Kelce. The crazy part is Kelce is about 3 yards from it. Like, it was a bad throw. Texans gonna get the ball. They, you know, they are managing the game pretty well. And then a flag is on the ground. For what? Because top of Will Anderson's head touched the face mask of Patrick Mahomes. They threw a roughing the passer call. It wasn't more than 2 steps. Will Anderson had taken 1 step. He swiped down. All the forcible contact is in Patrick Mahomes' chest. He doesn't fall on him or anything. Roughing the passer. Are you freaking kidding me? And of course, the Chiefs go down and get points. Then later in the game, Mahomes is sliding. The two Texans hit each other, and they call a penalty on them hitting each other. They never even hit him. If it was, it was incredibly minimal. And the flag's out. And of course, the Chiefs go down and get a touchdown. And it's just like, and just those two players, the plays everyone looking at and goes, it happens every single time with that team. Every single time with that team in those spots, they get that flag. Every time. And at a certain point, it's, I remember the Patriots weren't liked. I'm Patriots fans. I remember we were hated. We were hated because we beat you. Not because we, to me, that was deflate gate, but that was a 45-7 game. And the Indianapolis Colts had deflated footballs too. Spygate. Okay. Right? Like, whatever. And then the Tuck Rule. Cool. But for the most part, we just beat you. People got tired of us beating them. Like, we walked down. It was Patriots down 4, 2.5. The Patriots down 4, minute 45 left, 1 timeout. And we marched down the field and scored a touchdown with 20 seconds left on you repeatedly. Like, that's why people hated us, because we were better than you. A lot. The Chiefs feel like y'all get hated because, god damn, like, every time they need that flag, they get it. Every single time. And so that, and it's a situation where people are like, people are screaming rigged. Like, there's no way that you get that flag every single time. And so, you know, and that's the beef with a lot of the Chiefs stuff, is that they seem to get that flag, like I said, every single time. Oh, a little bit of breaking news into the show. The Chiefs and Texans, the game we were just talking about, actually, was the most watched NFL game ever, playoff or regular season game, dating back to 1987. And then Divisional Saturday was the best viewership in 10 years. So, hey, you know, people are still tuning in to football. That's always going to be a thing. NFL's king, right? All right, moving on. Coming out of the AFC, jumping to the NFC with the Washington Commanders with their upset of the one seed Detroit Lions. Absolutely spectacular game. A game, again, that was very, very high scoring. I mean, Washington scored 28 points in the second quarter. It was a game that was incredibly high scoring. Start to finish all the way through. And like I said, even though this was the biggest margin of victory, it was 14. Up until about 3 minutes left, you didn't really relax if you're Washington. And again, let's run through the numbers. Jaden Daniels, 22 of 31, 299, 2 touchdowns. He was never sacked. Jared Goff, 23 of 40, 313, 1 touchdown, 3 picks. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention David Montgomery's 1 for 1 for 20 yards. Teddy Bridgewater is 1 for 1 with 3 yards. He was in for Jared Goff, was momentarily getting evaluated for a concussion. And Jamison Williams, 0 for 1 with the interception. Again, got a little too cute there from Ben Johnson. Running the ball, Brian Robinson led the Commanders, who ran for 182. Brian Robinson led the Commanders with 77 yards on 15 carries and 2 touchdowns. Jaden Daniels pitched another 51 on the ground on 16 carries. Eckler had 47 yards on 6 carries. And then for the Lions, Sonic, a.k.a. Jahmyr Gibbs, goes for 105 yards on with 2 touchdowns on 14 carries. Jamison Williams on a beautiful end around, 61 yards on 1 carry for a touchdown. And then Knuckles, David Montgomery, 28 yards on 7 carries. And the Lions actually ran for 201 yards and 3 touchdowns on about half the carries that the Commanders ran for 182 on. De'Ami Brown and Terry McLaurin led the Commanders in receiving. De'Ami Brown with 98 yards. Terry McLaurin with 87 yards and a touchdown. Amon-Ra led the Lions in receiving, a 137 on 8 catches. And then Sonic, again, Jahmyr Gibbs, 70 yards on 6 catches with LaPorta, another 6 catches and 51 yards. Going to the team stats real quick. The Lions had more first downs, 30-27. The Commanders ran more plays, only by 5. The Lions outgained them by 40, 521 to 481. The Lions had more yards to play by about a yard. The big numbers, two big numbers jumps out in this stat. Red zone, just like I said last time, the better red zone team won the Texans and Chiefs game. The better red zone team won the Commanders and Lions game. The Commanders were 4-for-4 in the red zone. The Lions was 3-for-6. And in time of possession, the Lions had the ball about 8 more minutes. I mean, the Commanders had the ball about 8 more minutes than the Lions. So, we spoke about this moment last week. And I said, man, Jaden Daniels arrived as a superstar. And I even tweeted out on Instagram and everything. I posted about it. Jaden Daniels arrived as a superstar. There was his superstar moment against the Bucks. Those who watched the Commanders knew what Jaden Daniels was doing. If you were really into the rookie evaluation and stuff like that, you knew what Jaden Daniels was doing. But for the most part, the national market, like, no one cared in Detroit what Jaden Daniels was doing. He wasn't on the schedule, and he wasn't in the division, and he couldn't hit the one seed. He was irrelevant. You know, if you were in the bottom of the thing, you didn't care what Jaden Daniels was doing. Outside of giving you hope for your own rookie quarterback, you didn't care what Jaden Daniels was doing. But national stage, the last, you know, Sunday night. I mean, not the last Sunday night, but no, was it the last Monday night? You know, primetime game. No, it wasn't. Vikings was. Primetime game, Sunday night football, NBC/Peacock, the whole world's watching. You're the underdog, and you do that moment with that drive to win that game. And it was like, okay, this is your superstar moment. A couple days ago, Saturday night, was Jaden Daniels' top five moment. That was his moment, you know, and I'm relating this to the Heisman moment. Again, for Daniels, it was the 86-yard run against Florida where he scampers through in Death Valley untouched. Maybe he was in the swamp. Might have been in the swamp. But wherever he was, he goes through 86 yards untouched. The superstar moment to me, and I say there's 7 to 8 in the league at any time. Now, he's top five. And his nickname is JD5, or it's that kid, Jaden. You got to start saying JD top five. I mean, that kid is insane. He's the best quarterback in the NFC. He is, you know, the fifth best quarterback in the league. You know, my big fours all play in the AFC. It's Mahomes, it's Allen. In no particular order, it's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, and Lamar. Again, no order. And I always say, man, the top five quarterbacks, I always say CJ Stroud, like the top five quarterbacks might play in the AFC. No, the fifth best quarterback plays in Washington. He's in the NFC. He's the best quarterback in the NFC. It's Jaden Daniels. Now, do I think he's absolutely being helped right now with Cliff Kingsbury? Of course. And remember, Washington fans have to be kind of getting deja vu a little bit because RG3, by the time that rookie year was over, people were saying he was a top five quarterback in the league. Which he was, and then injuries and, you know, fallout and so on and so forth occur, and he was never the same after blowing out his knee. Blowing out his knee, but, you know, this has to be getting a little bit of deja vu, and not in the sense of a bad thing, but in the sense of, man, almost like we had to wait a decade plus to get our guy back. Very similar situations. I mean, team a little bit underachieved in college for what you end up winning, but you win the Heisman. You're a skinnier quarterback. People talk about your legs probably was your best asset early. You're great with the deep ball. Like, it's almost to DT, the same exact storyline. Except, you know, Griffin didn't transfer. Jaden had a transfer situation. But other than that, they're about what and what are the storyline. Number two overall pick behind a guy that was reportedly seen as generational Andrew Luck, which he was before the injuries, Caleb Williams for Jaden Daniels. I mean, the history is almost copying itself for Washington with Jaden Daniels. And to me, he's the fifth best quarterback in the league. Now, do I have the raw number to support it? No, but I know what my eyes are telling me. My eyes are telling me four quarterbacks are left in the NFL, and he's one of the four. My eyes are telling me that the others are one of the top five in Patrick Mahomes, one of the top five in Josh Allen, and then say Jalen Hurts, who's hanging around that 8-9-ish mark just outside of the superstar club. Josh Allen beat one of the other top five in Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow couldn't drag his disaster of a franchise into the playoffs. Otherwise, who knows what he would have done as like a 7 seed. But Jaden Daniels is a top five quarterback in the league. He's so poised, man. He is so poised. And it's like he makes the right decision every single time. It's rare for a vet to make the right decision every single time. It's like it's always in that moment. I talk about the Chiefs, how that throw is always made, how that call is always called, how that play is always happened. If you're like Daniels, 4th and 2, always gets 3. 3rd and 8, deep over route, it's always right in the bucket. oh, he's got to dance around this sack and get through the line on third and nine. He gets 12. And it's like it happens. I feel like it happens every single time, especially in these two playoff games. He put together two. He put together the game-winning drive against Tampa and the put-away drive against Detroit. And it was like it was every single play was the right decision every time. And that is – it's insane, especially out of a rookie, to get that from him. But he gets it, again, every single time. But moving on to Detroit, man, heartbreaker of a year. And Dan Campbell's raw emotions at the podium, I felt that. I felt his raw emotions. I felt his compassion. I felt him in that moment. And it's just like, man, you talk about the players work so hard. And they did. They battled. And they played it almost perfectly throughout the season. I mean, they were 15-2. They get the one seed. They smashed Minnesota in week 18. I mean, they get the bye week. And I was saying it was going to be a traditional bye week because they didn't have, like, the Chiefs had the double bye with sitting week 18. You don't get the wild card game, and then you play division round. The Lions played week 18 and then had the traditional bye week and then played again. But the injury was just too much to overcome. They had 16 players, I think, on injury reserve. It was just too much. You know, you kind of replaced – you don't ever replace Aiden Hutchinson, but you're filling his gap, and your linebacker core was smashed to bits. Your corners were out. I mean, they were just it was too much at a certain point. They were too injured, and they couldn't overcome it against a really, really talented quarterback and talented offense, and it seemed like every weak spot they had, Cliff Kingsbury found it. I mean, plain and simple. It was like every singular weak spot they had, Cliff Kingsbury got his hands on it and he found it. And so that's hard to overcome. But, you know, the Lions fought, man. And now the big question in Detroit is what's going to happen now? Both coordinators are expected to get head coaching jobs. Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn are expected to be gone. So since Dan Quinn's got there, Dan Campbell's got there, he's had ultimate stability. He's had both his coordinators. He's had his quarterback. Like, he's had as much stability as you can have at the coaching at the NFL level as far as the upper echelon. Same GM, same coordinators, same quarterback. Mostly the same stars. Like, it's been just a stable operation. So now he's looking at staring at possibly replacing his OC and his DC. Knowing Dan Campbell, he'll promote from within. And kind of just do a pull-up. Everybody gets pulled up. And he ends up probably the assistant linebacker coach. May end up being the linebacker coach. The linebacker coach becomes the DC. And I think you just pull everybody up. And then the OC, you know what I'm saying? The QB coach becomes the OC. And then the assistant QB coach becomes the QB coach. And again, everybody just pulls up. Knowing Dan Campbell, he's really big on keeping things internal and keeping things in the family. So that's what I expect in Detroit. And then Jared Goff's gaffes. Whatever you want to say, it reared its ugly head again, and somewhere in some room, and maybe not today, but somewhere in some room, Sean McVay at some point is going to go, that's why. Like, and Detroit fans, I'm sure, are going, that's why the LA traded for Matt Stafford. Games like this, it always seems to happen to Jared Goff every single time. Goff's going to gaff. Goff's going to be a goof. Like, it's going to happen every time. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's why McVay got rid of you. But jumping into Sunday, the Rams versus the Philadelphia Saquons. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles. Absolutely spectacular day for Saquon Barkley and the Philadelphia Eagles. The snow game, which actually what was weird about this game was this wasn't supposed to be the snow game. The snow game was supposed to be the Bills and the Ravens, who we'll talk about, of course, lastly, just being in order. But it was supposed to be the Bills and the Ravens. This game ended up being the snow game. And so that limited the Eagles passing game even more than what it already is. And it caused a lot of turnovers late. But let's get into the numbers. Matt Stafford, 26 to 44, 324, two touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked five times. Jalen Hurts was 15 to 20, 128, no touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked seven times. Kyren Williams, buck 06, No touchdowns and a very costly fumble. Saquon Barkley, 205, two touchdowns. Jalen Hurts, 70 with one touchdown. They ran for 285 in this game. Puka Nacua led the Rams in receiving with 97 yards, no touchdowns. Dallas Goedert led a very limited pass attack for Philly with 56 yards and no touchdowns. Fumbling was a big issue in this game. Rams fumbled three times, lost two of them, with Kyron Williams picking up one of the Matt Stafford ones. And the Eagles fumbled two times, didn't lose either of them. So huge news there. They didn't lose either of their fumbles. And let's go to the team stats. Rams had two more first downs. Rams had ran nine more plays. Rams had 52 more yards. Yards per play were dead even at 5.7. But of course, there's always a number that jumps out. And the number in this game, in a snow game, was the rushing yards, 111 to 285. And that was the difference in the game. Say the Rams didn't have Saquon Barkley. I mean, it was just plain and simple. Say, I mean, it was one of those games where if the MVP could be counted for the playoff runs as well, like how the conference championship games are in the Heisman voting, quote unquote, like the votes don't come out in time, Saquon Barkley would have ran his way into the MVP. He rushes for a team record 205 rushing yards, in the team playoff record 205 rushing yards, including the 78-yard dagger, in which he runs and just slaps his helmet halfway through and he's gone. And I mean, absolutely, that's why you paid him. Because on 30 touches, 26 unbeaten rushes, he had 232 total yards and two touchdowns. I mean, absolutely spectacular day from Saquon Barkley in a game where the Eagles, already limited in passing, couldn't pass to even more. And so it was just a game. It was Saquon Barkley's night. You know, a shout out Matt Stafford for continuing the battle, continuing to throw the ball, and continuing to find a way to throw the ball, because most teams would have packed it up, but they couldn't run it. I mean, they ran it decently well, but hell, for the most part, Tyron Williams had 30 yards on one rush. For the rest of the game, he's 18 carries for 76 yards. That ain't doing much. And Saquon, for the most part, was bottled, except he had a 78-yard and a 62-yard touchdown. But for the most part, he was bottled up. But just that explosiveness, man, he gets through it. And on the 78-yard run, there's video of him looking at Jalen Hurts and going, "I got it." And Hurts looked down at him and smiled and goes, "Okay, let's do it." And he slips through the gap, sets his block up perfectly, and smacks his head on the goalpost for a Saquon signature run with the snow in his face. I mean, it was picturesque. It was movie-esque. And then, of course, the Rams came right down the field and scored. So everybody got a little nervous, but ultimately, the Rams just didn't have enough time. And it was just a great moment for the city of Philly. I hope Saquon can renegotiate his contract, because 3 years for 37, I think up to 42 and a half, that ain't enough. I mean, he needs to go in and, like, hold out. And I mean, look, I ain't coming back unless I get my money. Like, I'm talking, like, if I'm him, I want $18 to $20 million a year. I'm the best player on this team, especially if they win a Super Bowl off him or even a conference off him. I need $18 to $20 million a year, or you got to trade me. Like, I mean, that's if I'm him, that's what I'm going in demanding. I need my money in the offseason. But sliding into L.A., quick to talk about what's going on with them. Because, I mean, there was not much talk about in this game. It was Saquon Barkley night, to be honest with you. Moving to L.A., Matt Stafford, he did something you never want to hear a player do, which was, "I'll take time to decide my future." It usually never goes well. Either they retire or they come back and it's not the same. They have an off year, then they walk. But Stafford did say he would take time to decide his future, which is my – can Matt Stafford do something to guarantee his number Hall of Fame? Yes, he can come back and win a Super Bowl, right? And then he's guaranteed in the Hall of Fame. He'd have all the counting numbers and two rings. Like, he'd be guaranteed the Hall of Fame. I think he won Super Bowl MVP, although that doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot in the Hall of Fame discussion. Right now, would I put him in the Hall of Fame? I would say so. Like, I would put him in. But it would be close. And he doesn't have the all pros. And he's got the Pro Bowls. He doesn't have the all pros like that. At no point was he regarded as the best quarterback. To be honest, at no point was he regarded as a top five quarterback, maybe besides that first year in L.A. He had a lot of losing early in Detroit. So, I mean, it would be – he'd be teetering in the Hall of Fame. But he's heading on to decide his future, which is kind of going to hold the Rams up as an org. And the reason why is now – I mean, now they have the – they have the task of going back to L.A. And, of course, I'm sure the entire Rams org is now focusing on helping L.A. and the Los Angeles area with the fires and the Palisade fires and everything. Again, that heartbreaking tragedy. But now what do you do if you're the Rams? Do you say, how do we feel about Jaxon Dart? How do we feel about, trying to think of another guy, Jalen Milroe? How do we feel about... I mean, not Shadur and Cam Ward, obviously, but how do we feel about some of these other quarterbacks coming out in the draft? Do we say, all right, let's get the heir apparent to Stafford on the roster? It's not Stetson Bennett, so let's get the heir apparent to Stafford on the roster. How do we feel about, let's say Stafford walks, do we call Sam Darnold? You know, do we make that call for Teddy Bridgewater? You know, like I said, do we just draft? I say we draft Jaxon Dart late first round and just say, hey, we got you for 5 years on the team control. Stafford plays one more and walks. You show up as a second-year player. You know, decisions have to be made in L.A., but they're all contingent on Matt Stafford's decision. Oh, but the game I struggled to put last because I want to talk about it from the door. The Ravens and the Bills. The Ravens and the Bills. The Bills and the Ravens. Ravens and the Bills. The nightcap, the end of the division round, the absolute whale of a ball game. To me, the best game of the weekend. Although Commander Lions has a case, to me, the best game of the weekend. Before I get into my gloat session, I will run through the numbers like I always do. Lamar Jackson, probably his best playoff L playing-wise. We'll get into that later. Lamar Jackson... So 18 to 25, 254, two touchdowns, one pick. He was somehow sacked twice. Josh Allen, 16 of 22, 127, no touchdowns, no picks. Derrick Henry, 16 carries, 84 yards, one touchdown, with a longest rush of 17. For context, Justice Hill, six carries, 50 yards, longest 22, but we'll get into that later. Lamar Jackson pitching another 39 on the ground. James Cook led the... Bills in rushing, 67 yards on 17 carries. A couple other guys pitched in for the Bills to get to 147. The Ravens ran for 176. Isaiah Likely led the Ravens in receiving, 73 yards on four carries and a touchdown. Rashad Bateman had 66 yards on four catches and a touchdown. Mark Andrews had 61 yards on five catches. And Khalil Shakir easily led the Bills with 67 yards on six catches. No one else on the team had more than 15 yards. The case in this game will be the turnover situation. Mark Andrews fumbles once. Lamar Jackson fumbles once. Tylan Wallace fumbles once. Nobody on the Bills fumbles at all. And going to our team stats, the Ravens had three more first downs. The Ravens had 140-odd more yards. The Ravens had 2.5 more yards per play. They basically doubled them in pass yards, 29 more rushing yards. But two big numbers will jump out to you, which will be the turnovers, 3-0, three for the Ravens, none for the Bills, and the red zone. Literally the fourth game in a row where the better red zone team wins the game. And actually, hold on, let me double check the stats for that. Let me go to the Eagles and Rams. Nope, actually, no. So the Rams have a better red zone. So three out of four games, the better red zone team won the game. Three out of four, right? The better red zone team wins the game as the Ravens were 2-for-3, but the Bills were 3-for-4. And again, the big number in this game was the turnover battle, 3-0, with the Ravens giving up three turnovers. But... you know, it's moments like these as a media person, as a sportscaster, as a guy who does this, that you feel very vindicated. I had a take, and for the life of me, I could not find it. You guys are probably better at it than me, but I know I've told it to a bunch of people. You know, people who are hearing this podcast, if you know me, you know I've said this plenty of times. What did I say? I said that the Ravens signing Derrick Henry looked great on paper, but ultimately will do nothing. And in the moment, you need it to happen. Instead, you will look around and say, dang, we didn't do what we needed to do in a big moment again. Because before you signed Derrick Henry, you had the best rushing attack in football. You had a passing game that would left something to be desired in big moments. You had a young and experienced offensive line. And you had a defense who could sell you at any given moment. After you signed Derrick Henry, and last night, what happened? You had a passing game that you couldn't count on in big moments. You had a young and experienced offensive line. You had a tendency to turn the ball over. And you had a very large running back that did not help you when you needed him to. Because Derrick Henry had 84 yards on 16 carries. That is a yards per carry of 5.5. Justice Hill had 50 yards on 6 carries, a yards per carry of 8.3. Lamar Jackson had 39 yards on 6 carries, a yards per carry of 6.5. Derrick Henry had the worst yards per carry on your team. Because the signing did nothing. You ultimately did nothing. And people blabbed me for my take. I got looked at crazy. I said the Ravens are going to be second round and out. And Derrick Henry in the big game is not going to even probably be your best rusher. Because it's not going to do much for you in the long run. And oh, looky there. In the big game, he was not your best average rusher. It ultimately did nothing for you. And once again, your passing game cost you a game because you couldn't get a stop either when you needed it to. No, you didn't. You turned three. You stopped them from getting 7 in the big moment. You held them to 3, which opened the door for the Mark Andrews gaffe at the end. But ultimately, Derrick Henry didn't do a whole heck of a lot. Didn't even get 100 yards. And you're gone in the second round. Again, yeah. You know, I mean, if you're the Bills, if you're the Ravens, you should be used to this. You're usually always done by the time the president's elected. By the time Martin Luther King Day rolls around, the Ravens are at home annually. And it's just be normal for you because maybe you should have spent that $9 to $12 million on Derrick Henry on, let's say, another receiver. Let's go with another tight end. How about a linebacker? Corner, safety, something other than what you were already really, really good at. You know, you were the best in the league at it. And Derrick Henry didn't make you that much better where the gap became that much bigger. You idiots. Next time, spend money on something that matters. Like, I don't know. The Eagles had, hey, our running backs are always hurt and can't explode. Saquon Barkley may always be hurt, but there's one thing he can do, it's explode. And he's been doing that to everyone all season. Oh, the Green Bay Packers had a problem with power running. So they got their running back in Josh Jacobs to power run. People usually do free agency. They usually do that to solve a problem, not get better at what they already were great at. That's a draft thing. You get that next running back to keep going with your running back. Like, you know, you don't pay for what you're already really good at. But, you know, hey, Baltimore, you signed Derrick Henry. Good job, guys. Whatever. So, all-time take by me. It didn't look great at certain moments. I had to ride that take out, but all-time take by me. And then I will do some quick hitters on this game. This game was not Lamar Jackson. Anyone who says otherwise is a goof. Lamar played really, really well all game from start to finish. He had the pick that was basically a punt. He was anticipating a coverage. He got fooled. He threw a pick. But he had the fumble. The fumble wasn't great either. But other than that, he's played really, really well. Was it an A-plus game? No. But was it an F game or a D-minus game? No. I give it a B-minus game for him. He played good. He played good enough to win the game. But Mark Andrews decided that wasn't going to happen. He had a fumble that was at a drive that was going to net you at least three. And he dropped the two-point conversion on a play that was going to tie the game. Now, minute and a half left at home, Josh Allen with the ball. Bills probably win anyway. But, you know, Lamar played good enough to win. He was let down by his teammates. And he said after the game, we got to stop turning the effing ball over. Like, we got to stop. Like, that's how we lose these games. And Lamar had 2 to 3 turnovers, right? But now you sit in Baltimore. What do you do? I assume Derrick Henry comes back next year. You know, but his money's not guaranteed. I'm sure he's going to want guarantees. That could be a situation. You have free agents, you know, that are going to come up in key spots, including Ronnie Staley. Todd Monken is a hot name on the coordinator list. You might have to replace another coordinator. Like, what do you do? It could be very interesting in Baltimore. But that was the longest A block I've ever had. Very long-winded A block, but now we're going to shift into conference championship week. Welcome back into the show, and I appreciate you guys for rocking with me on that really, really long A block, but I had a lot to get out there. Division round was exciting, and usually we don't get to record the next day, so I was excited for that. But we're moving into conference championship week, and we'll pick winners and stuff in Jack's Pack. You know how we guys do it. We will touch on the games right now. So first off, the NFC will go first. The NFC will play at 2 p.m. Central Time on Sunday. The game will be on Fox. It will be the Washington Commanders, led by rookie sensation Jaden Daniels, entering the link, going into Philadelphia to play their division opponent, actually. And again, that game will be Sunday, January 26th at 2 p.m. And this game is an exciting football game. I mean, from top to bottom, we have two dynamic quarterbacks. We have two solid coaches, staffs. I don't really love the Eagles staff. I love the Commander staff. I don't love the Eagles staff. But these teams are 1-1 over the course of the season. Now, the one Commanders win was the Jalen Hurts concussion game, and Kenny Pickett gave him fits. At the same time, Kenny Pickett was a starting quarterback in the league, number one. Number two, like, number one, right? And number two, you don't prep for the backup quarterback. So, you know, there was probably the game plan gets tossed out of the window because Kenny Pickett isn't doing none of the stuff Jalen Hurts would do. And then the Eagles, when those two teams played earlier in the year, it was early in the year, the Eagles did come up with the win. Okay? So we're good on that. Now, this is a game that can come down to Jaden Daniels could be the first rookie quarterback to lead his team to the Super Bowl. There have been five other rookie quarterbacks who start in the conference championship game in this situation. All five have lost. Most recently, you look at Joe Flacco's of the world. You look at Brock Purdy. That was the elbow game where he hurts his elbow in like the first like drive or so. And at one point, Christian McCaffrey's playing quarterback. The actual inspiration for the rule for the emergency third string quarterback for that game. If you start two players get hurt, you can have one player who was inactive, but as your emergency quarterback can come in the game and play quarterback for that reason. Because the Eagles hurt Purdy's elbow, and then it hurt somebody. The other quarterback gets hurt. And then at one point, CMC comes in to play quarterback, and Purdy's back in the game but couldn't throw it. It was a mess, right? But it was the inspiration for the emergency third-string quarterback. Anyway, so now Jaden Daniels is in this position, right? He has passed every test he's given. A couple of pop quizzes, too. He's passed. He's rolling. Right now, he's aced them all. And now he goes up against the Eagles, probably the best front seven he has seen and will see this season. This front seven is mean, nasty, and they're coming after him. Now, the benefit, and they've got a lot of sacks recently. The benefit is, I think the better D-line would have been the Rams. Because the Rams get their pressure with four. The Eagles usually have to bring a fifth or sixth guy in order to get their pressure. So that could open up some passing lanes and some running lanes if he slips through it. that can open up some running lanes for him to get into the cold, wintry air in the link and to cause heartbreak in Philly. However, on the Eagles side, Saquon Barkley has to be licking his chops. Oh my God, that defense is bad. Like, he has to be looking and going, that defense is awful, which it is. They have no chance on this God's green earth of stopping me. Like, in my mind, that's where I'm going. I'm looking straight at that defense and going, oh my God, give me the ball and keep giving it to me. Don't pass it tonight. Like, I got it. He should be looking in the huddle going, I got it, every single time. That defense in Washington is awful. Jahmyr Gibbs ripped through it like a hot knife through butter. Like, that defense is a disaster. Now, they're opportunistic. If you mess up, they will take it from you. I will give them that credit. If you get it wrong, they will take it from you. In terms of you guess wrong on the read, Aaron throw, they're catching the pick. But as far as if you don't give them the ball, they are going to get gashed repeatedly. And that's not even from a scheme, but they're just not good enough. I think Washington's entire offseason should be focused on retooling the defense. That's the number two receiver and retooling the defense because it's bad. Like, the O-line's pretty solid, but that O-line's decent. But that, man, like, Ronnie Staley should be looking at Washington to go for them, probably play left tackle for them, and then they need to retool that defense. It's awful. If I'm Saquon Barkley, I'm licking my chops. If I'm Philly, I know my passing game isn't great, right? Like, I know that for a fact. The weather is not known as of now. The country's kind of all over the place. For instance, I'm in Louisiana, and we're expected to get effectively a winter storm. So it's insane. But right now, it's supposed to be a real feel of 29 and sunny when that game kicks off. So cold, but not a wintry blast situation is going to happen there. So great news for the Washington pass game. They can play in the cold. They just showed that. They can pass through the cold, and they play in Washington. So their issue is going to be having to battle, like I said, with that front seven, and then slowing down Saquon is going to be a major problem for them. And I think that one of the more interesting battles is going to be Nick Sirianni versus Dan Quinn, situationally. Now, I think Dan Quinn is the better coach. Like I said, I love the Washington coaching staff. They have the best two head coaches on the field. They have Cliff Kingsbury, and they have Dan Quinn. And I think the worst two head coaches is Nick Sirianni and Kellen Moore. But I think situationally, the Washington Commanders, I think, are going to win this game situationally. Now, a matter of how many situations occur, who knows? But I think from a coaching perspective and a strategic perspective, the best situational organization in this game will be the Washington Commanders. Nick Sirianni is a goof. He's a mistake waiting to happen. Kellen Moore, I think, has split brain right now. He's interviewing with Dallas. He could be the head man in Dallas soon. And I just didn't like how he called that game. I mean, you're in a snow bowl and you're pulling the ball out of 26 hands. Like, I just didn't like how he called that game. I think OCs can get ego-y. And he's like, no, I'm going to prove I can do this in any situation. And at a certain point, you got to be use common sense, right? And you got to use your brain here. And I just don't think Kellen Moore does that sometimes. So it's going to be a very interesting battle there. So we'll pick our winners in our next segment. In the AFC Championship game, the Arrowhead Invitational at this point. For the sixth time in 7 years, the AFC Championship game is being played in Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. This time, the Buffalo Bills enter, and they come to battle. And it's going to be a ball game. Ironically, from a betting perspective, both games are 47.5 over-unders. That's intriguing. It was weird, but we'll get into the betting a little more. But both game over-unders are set at 47.5. The Bills won in the regular season. The Kansas City Chiefs, with their starters, have only lost one game. And that's to the Buffalo Bills a couple of months ago. So, are they different teams? Sure. But a couple of months ago, The Bills in Buffalo beat them 31-20. Yeah, the only team the Chiefs have lost to with their starters in the last 400-ish days is the Bills. And so now the Bills are coming in, riding high. They got over a hump. They're going into KC. They're confident. However, you're dealing with the playoff Chiefs. You're dealing with the playoff Chiefs and just how they always seem to get it, right? And how they always seem to figure it out and how they always get the call, how they always get the play, how they Travis Kelce wakes up. It's like they were saving Kelce all season for this moment. Chris Jones knows, I got to make three plays. You know, I'm on the field for 30 snaps. If I get three tackle for losses and one sack in those 30 snaps, I've earned my money. I mean, it's just you have these guys who are just playoff savants. Like, if you ever watch Chris Jones, young pass rushers and young players go hard every single play. Once Chris Jones realizes he's double teamed, he's staying straight up. And he's looking at the backfield. And he's looking to see if you're trying to scramble. And he's looking to see if you're trying to throw. He could bat the ball down. But he's not about trying to bully through two people on a pass. For what? He's never going to make it. And so you have, you know, stuff like that where it's just like, man, these guys are so freaking smart. And it looks like they're always correct in what they do. Looking at Kansas City and their weather, Jesus Christ, it's 21 degrees right now in Kansas City. So their weather is 38 degrees with a real feel of 33 with sunny. So you look at 38 degrees, or high 30 degrees, probably by the time you get to game time, probably slightly below freezing and sunny. And then going back to Philly and their weather, I realized I looked at the wrong thing. But going back to Philly and their weather, they are sitting at, again, similar, very similar weather. Right around freezing, real feel of 32-ish. Cloudy, however, in Philly. As the rain will, the storm seems to be moving in, but won't get there in time for the game. But back to KC and Buffalo, this is going to be a heck of a ball game. Both games I expect to be really, really good. I expect Commanders and Eagles to be very high scoring. So if I was betting over unders, I would bet the over Commanders and Eagles. I don't know if they're going to be high scoring in Philly. I mean, in KC, they scored 51 last time. So I would lean towards that this time. You get more of the playoff Chiefs as far as they just are great situationally. But 2 points on the Bills, man. And then we're going to move into our Jack's Pack. 2 points on the Bills. Number one, they just feel like a team of destiny. They feel like they're just finding ways. And the Chiefs always, the team, the joke on the internet is the Chiefs are a team of black magic. I'm not going to get into that. But it feels like the Chiefs always get that moment. They always get that call. They always get that whatever. The Bills are just like, they're getting, not lucky, but it's like they're just getting moments to happen for them. Like the Mark Andrews stuff. He has a safety to beat to the end zone. He scores, and who knows where that game goes, and he gets popped out. And then the drop on the two-point conversion, he basically triple catches it and somehow still doesn't catch it. You know, and just the Bills are just finding ways to win, man. And when you get to that point, when you get to a situation where you feel like you are just inventing ways to win, not inventing, but you're finding ways to win, you almost feel like, it has to be our year. Because honestly, and my second point on them is, if not now, when? You had a playoffs where Joe Burrow wasn't in it. You had a playoffs where, you know, you're existing in a league where the Patriots are maybe starting to figure this thing back out. Vrabel's back in there. They have the quarterback. The Dolphins were a disappointment. The Jets were the Jets, whatever. But the Patriots are starting to figure their life out with $130 million in cap space. And they have Drake May. And they have Mike Vrabel. And they have belief in the building again. How long will your grip on the division even be? Again, Burrow's not in it. You beat Lamar. Herbert was beaten by the Texans. The Texans were then beaten by the Chiefs. Like, a lot of the top guys in your conference, you only had to play one. So far, and that was Lamar. You didn't have to play Herbert. You didn't have to face Burrow. You didn't have to face Stroud. You didn't have to face Hurt. You know what I'm saying? So you didn't have to face Herbert. So you're starting to get to a point where if you're Buffalo, if not now, if you don't win the conference and get to the Super Bowl in New Orleans now, when are you ever gonna do it? Burrow's going to be in the playoffs next year. So will Herbert. So will Stroud. So will Lamar. So will Mahomes. So will yourself. To me, there's one seed available in the AFC next year. if you don't get in this year and you don't get the Super Bowl this year, to me, similar to the Lions, if you don't get it now, when are you going to? So I'm sure that's a play that's what's in the thought of a lot of Buffalo Bills. If you don't get it this year, when are you ever going to get it? But up next, we're going to shift to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome into the show, or back into the show, rather. And now we're going to get into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Last week, we went 3-1. I know a lot of people were heartbroken because at the time of the game, the Chiefs were -9.5. We got the number at -8. So we hit it at -8. We missed on Eagles, -6.5 versus the Rams by a literal point. Hurts. We almost went undefeated, but we went 3-1. Brings our playoff total to 6-4, which is 60%. 56% is our goal. So we're right now we're on our goal perfectly. Oh, but let's get into these numbers really quickly. Commanders +5.5 at the Eagles. Take the Commanders. I have been driving the Jaden Daniels bandwagon all season. I'm not getting off of it now. I think the Commanders actually win this game and get into the Super Bowl. And yeah, like it, I truly think they're gonna win. And they're going to get into the Super Bowl, and we're going to have our first rookie in the Super Bowl ever. Dan Quinn's going to get back to the Super Bowl, first time since blowing 28-3. Cliff Kingsbury won't be at his new team. I don't think Kingsbury gets a job this cycle, which would be enormous for the Commanders. But I don't think, from kind of what I'm reading in the tea leaves and who's getting second interviews and who's getting whatever, I don't think Cliff Kingsbury gets a job this cycle, which, again, would be massive for the Commanders because, in my opinion, he comes back. I don't see a coach being able to pry him away from Washington. A friend of mine, we were talking, and he was like, man, if Ben Johnson gets a job, the first call he's making is to Cliff Kingsbury, and he's like, whatever you want to come be the OC, come do it. I don't see that happening. Like, I don't see anyone being able to pull him away from Washington. He's the head coach of his own side of the ball. Like, you know, so on and so forth. Like, unless it's for a head job, I don't see him leaving Washington. So because of which, that would be huge for Jaden Daniels going into year two to retain Cliff Kingsbury. I just don't see Kingsbury getting a job this cycle. As of now, things could change. But as of right now, I don't see it. But I think the Commanders win this game outright. So definitely take them +5.5. And we're going to have Jaden Daniels in the Super Bowl. And then the second game, Chiefs -2.5 versus the Bills. Take the Chiefs. Here's my thing about this game. If this was a game that was in the regular time, I don't touch this game. I don't get anywhere near it. If it was a regular situation, I don't get anywhere near it because 2.5 is dangerous. This is the walk-off field goal in overtime. Kansas City wins it. I have no confidence in who's going to win the game. I'm leaning towards the Bills. So my official pick is going to be the Bills. However, could I see this being 27-24, Harrison Butker for the win as time expires? Yeah. I don't see. If this was 3.5, I go the Bills. If this was 3, I probably go the Bills. The number being 2.5, it's smarter to be on the side of the 2.5. So that's why I lean Kansas City, but on the bet. But my pick to win the game is slightly the Bills. So, again, this is a game I probably stay away from. I don't touch it with a 10-foot pole in the regular season. Only being -2.5, and it's crazy. I'm putting the number in at 2.5. I'm watching the number fall to 2. I got to lean KC here. But my official game pick is going to be the Nope, I'm going to stick with the Chiefs. Oh, live. This is a live. I'm actually fighting instinct right now because, I'm going to go with the Bills. I'm flipping my pick. So live on the show, the pick is being flipped. The pick is being flipped live on the show to +2.5 for the Bills, and the Bills are going to win this game. Because the same feeling I got when I basically effectively live flipped to the Chiefs over the Texans on their bet, I'm getting the same feeling for the Bills. Bills, I'm flipping to the Bills plus 2.5, and the Bills are going to win this game. So that is my official picks. Washington Commanders plus 5.5 at the Eagles. Commanders are going to win the game outright. I'm riding the Jane. I've been driving the Jane Daniels bandwagon all year. Not going to get off now. And then Bills plus 2.5 to win the game outright against the Chiefs. But up next, we're going to have our best for last, which is going to be a discussion on the college football national championship game. Welcome back into the show and welcome in to the college football national championship game, best for last. The game goes down tonight in Atlanta at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So Ohio State enters as a 8.5-point favorite, although it opened at 9.5. Currently it sits at 8.5. So it's been bet down a little bit. The over-under sits at 45.5, with Notre Dame's money line being plus 300. The matchup predictor based on ESPN analytics has Ohio State as a 55% chance to win the game. The weather doesn't matter. It's a frozen one, but it's inside. The game will kick off at 6:30 local time, 7:30 Eastern time, which is when the game is going to be played in the Eastern time zone, and it will be on ESPN. This game sits to me as it would take a perfect Notre Dame game to keep it close. Not to win it, to keep it close. If Ohio State plays good, I'm not even saying great. If Ohio State is playing good, Notre Dame can't win this game. Texas, to me, was the, as I would say, healthy, good Georgia probably was the best team in the country. Ohio State had a case. Ohio State being 2, Texas being 3. Oregon probably being 4. But that top 4 could all meander through. Then to me, there was a gap before you get to like a Notre Dame. The last team out of that group is Ohio State. Mainly because they've all had to beat each other. Ohio State's beating Oregon. Ohio State's beating Texas. Notre Dame beat Georgia. Cool, but it was Georgia not playing their A game and with the back quarterback. Ohio State is going to have the 2 best receivers that Notre Dame will play all season. Notre Dame almost lost to a team who literally could not complete a pass to a receiver in Penn State. Ohio State has Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Buka. Emeka Buka is probably a first-round pick, early second at the latest. Jeremiah Smith is a first-round pick whenever he enters the NFL draft. If he entered the NFL draft as a freshman, he'd be a first-round pick. These two will easily be the best 2 receivers Notre Dame will have to contend with all season, and they ain't got enough. Not enough athleticism, not enough talent. It is what it is. Some games you're outmatched. Ohio State's the best team in the country. Good Ohio State was always the top 4 team to me. And they're the last one standing of that group. They're going to win this game easily. I mean, even take the 8.5. I mean, I'm swallowing the 8.5 here. They're going to me, run away and hide in this game. I think Notre Dame will try and keep it on the ground. Jeremiah Love, make it a close one. The better quarterback is at Ohio State in Will Howard. The best 2 receivers exist on Ohio State. To me, the best running back, I mean, Jeremiah Love's a better running back, but the best rushing attack, you got Henderson and Quishon Judkins and the duo for Ohio State. Like, it's just, they're just better. In certain situations, they're just better. And plain and simple, they're just better. It is what it is. And so Ohio State will get the draw. And to me, they win the national championship game. Ryan Day gets a massive contract extension in the offseason. And all the talk of him being fired never exists again. And Chip Kelly at that point has to decide if he ever wants to be a head coach again or he wants to continue OCing for Ohio State. What is his decision going to be? And where would he even go at this point? But could he be an OC in the NFL? Chip Kelly's OC in the NFL? Could be interesting. One of these Ben Johnson, he brings in Chip Kelly as an OC, or one of these defensive head guys brings in Chip Kelly as an OC. What if he ends up in New England as the OC? I mean, I don't know if there's many talks of that, but Vrabel needs an OC. What if Chip Kelly ends up the OC in New England? That's all he did with Philly. But that is all I have for today. Very NFL heavy show. We did touch a little college football there. The YouTube show will be coming out soon as well. That should happen within the next couple of days. You should see the newest episode of JTS After Dark. So make sure you look out for that and subscribe to the YouTube channel. But as always, this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out. Bye.